segregation of Atlanta's public conveyances, the streetcars, the trolleys, the buses, had been law in the state pretty much since the late 19th century. Jim Crow pretty much established that, right?
In fact, you know, the very first Jim Crow or legalized segregation ordinance in the state of Georgia involved the streetcars. And partly that was because streetcars represented sort of modern times, and they wanted to kind of replicate the Old South as much as possible in the New South. But also, if you think about it, the streetcars were places where every single day African-Americans and white citizens would be in close physical proximity, rubbing elbows literally, you know, and the middle of the streetcars, and then the buses would always be places of friction and contestation and so forth.
And to clarify that, it's interesting that the streetcars were shared by black and white. They just sat in different parts. Because the thought, I assume, was the cost was too prohibitive to come up with a whole separate transit system?
That's right. There were times where transit systems in Atlanta, and I think Savannah, contemplated actual dual cars, but it would have been too costly for them to do. So I mean, there was talk about that, but that was even thought about. But so you had this tense kind of environment, and the streetcars was African-Americans from the rear, whites from the front, and the middle always this kind of area of friction, as I said.
The catalyst for desegregation in Atlanta was the case in Montgomery.
That's right. The Montgomery bus boycott, which was a year-long boycott and which culminated in a federal court decision that was important because it extended the principle of the Brown case involving education beyond education alone. So now you could test legally in the courts other aspects of segregated life, including transportation. The Montgomery bus boycott also led to the prominence of Martin Luther King Jr., who shortly afterwards established a new organization, the SCLC. And one of the members of the SCLC and one who took note of what was going on in Montgomery was the Reverend William Holmes Borders in Atlanta of Atlanta's Wheat Street Baptist Church on Auburn Avenue.
So he and a few others test the Montgomery case in Atlanta.
Correct. Just a month or two after the court decision in Montgomery in the latter part of 1956, in January of 1957, Borders and five other ministers test Atlanta's segregated buses, and in a manner that's really different from Montgomery. Notably, they contact the mayor of Atlanta, William B. Hartsfield, in advance to tell them what they're going to do. So it's very choreographed. Remember, Hartsfield, by this time, has acquired a reputation for racial moderation. Around this time, he's credited with coining the phrase Atlanta, the city too busy to hate. He does not want adverse publicity coming to his city at all. So the ministers are aware of that. Borders, by this time, actually has a relationship with Hartsfield, and they contact him in advance and let them know that they're planning to sit in the front of a bus on January 9th.
The desegregation of Atlanta, that's typical for Atlanta. I mean, it was they did that with the library, the public schools. They did everything they could to avoid the violence and the confrontation.
And overseeing a lot of this, of course, is the figure of Hartsfield, who wants as much as possible to control the pace and rate of change and make sure that the city's image remains intact.
But it takes a couple of years, doesn't it, before a federal court finally rules on the Atlanta
situation? They actually sit down in the front of the bus. The bus driver immediately asks the white passengers to leave, puts a notice special on the sign of the bus and drives it back to the barn. And a suit is filed in federal court. And the courts do take a couple of years. And it is in January of 1959, almost 2 years to the date of the original bus boycott, that the court issues a ruling saying that the buses, Atlanta's segregated bus system is unconstitutional and needs to be dismantled.
And I had read, and you can confirm this for me, that Reverend Borders was always mindful of, we don't want to upset the apple cart, we don't want to offend people too much. He wanted the desegregation to be gradual, and that he actually urged black men, after the court ruling came down, not to sit on a bus next to white women.
Correct. I mean, Borders, on the one hand, he's a commanding figure in Atlanta's black community. He's been involved in the effort to get African-American police officers in 1946 and, you know, or shortly after that. You know, he's been a towering kind of figure. He's a strong advocate, and yet he's well aware of the realities of the day. And so when the buses are finally desegregated, his movement, which is called the Love, Law, and Liberation Movement, or the Triple L Movement, you know, tells people, and there are, you know, there are flyers and so forth to this effect: be courteous, do not sit next to white passengers, especially do not sit next to white women, because we don't want any crisis, we don't want any confrontation, we don't want things to get inflamed, we don't want civil unrest. So yeah, he's very, very cautious about that.
But the immediate result of the desegregation of Atlanta Public Transit was that white people largely just said, we're not going to ride it anymore.
That's right. By 1960, so a year later, African Americans are accounting for, I think, 60% of the ridership of the what was then called the Atlanta Transit System, despite only being at that point a third of the city population. So what's going on in transit, transportation, reflects this larger kind of sentiment among a broad swath of the white population that any African-American gains are kind of seen as white losses. And therefore, we're going to abandon these neighborhoods. We're going to abandon public transportation. We're going to abandon public schools shortly thereafter. We're ultimately going to abandon the city and move out to the suburbs. So the transportation story links to this broader story of white flight, eventually, and white abandonment of the city.
Interesting. Cliff Kuhn, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.